Today on the front porch, the creative process at work.
Any given time, there are 30 or 40 lottery-like ping pong balls bouncing around in my head. One of them shoots down to my heart, and we say, that's what we're going to do.
Ken Burns has been making documentary films on American history for over 20 years, but he has no fear of running out of ideas. The latest ping pong ball to emerge is the story of a Vermont doctor who was the first person to drive a car across the U.S. 100 years ago. That's coming to public television this fall. Tonight, Ken talks about his career in filmmaking, what he likes and doesn't like about his job, and how he came to live in New Hampshire. I'm John Walters. Join me and Ken Burns on the front porch on NHPR. By almost any standard, Ken Burns has had a remarkable career. In a time when documentary films have trouble getting anywhere, he's been making them for over 20 years. In the age of short attention spans, he takes time. And in a time when public television is looking for ways to boost viewership, he's attracted a large and faithful audience. His films have been praised by critics and historians. He's been credited with reawakening an interest in American history. His subjects have included baseball, jazz, the Civil War, and Thomas Jefferson, among many others. And whether he'd want the credit for it or not, it's hard to imagine things like the History Channel, the Discovery Channel, and the A&E Biography series without Ken Burns blazing the trail. He's won many awards, including the Career Achievement Award from the International Documentary Association. Ken lives and works in Walpole, New Hampshire, not far from the Connecticut River, one of the state's prettiest small towns. Ken, welcome to the front porch.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Making documentaries on public TV, often with few moving pictures, you fight the odds in so many ways. Why has it worked so well for you?
I'm not really sure. I think that there's a sense in our world. We live in this media culture where I think people try to convince you that if you wear the right perfume and have the right jeans and drive the right car, that everything's going to be all right. And after a while, I think we realize we come to know in our gut that it's not going to be all right and we're starved for something else. And I think part of that hunger for something else is a curiosity about where we've been. And that's what's animated my professional life for the last 25 years, is this curiosity of who are we as Americans. And I think that somewhere along the line, at some point in somebody's life, they're going to need to feel connected and stitched together with somebody else. And paradoxically, history is a wonderful way to remind people where they are now and where they might be going.
When you're putting a film together, do you worry about retaining the audience's attention, you know, with a lack of moving pictures often and with storytelling over hours of time?
Very much so. It might seem paradoxical, but I think that the one law in our editing room, besides, you know, historical accuracy, is keeping and focusing the attention of a viewer. Now, most of what television is a kind of passive exercise. You know, it washes over you. And unlike reading a book, unlike listening to radio, where you're the cinematographer and the set decorator as the audience, it's a very active thing. Television requires most of the time for the viewer to do nothing. I go in assuming that my audience is ignorant of the subject, but curious. And then it is my responsibility, our responsibility, because I don't want to in any way give you the impression that this isn't a huge team effort of people in Walpole and elsewhere that make these things happen. And I just have the luxury of signing my name to it. But wonderful, wonderful people make my job a lot easier. Our thing is to how to then keep their attention. That's our huge responsibility. And I'm always trying to be the viewer's representative in the editing room and say, wait a second, I just fell out. Why did we assume that? And so even though I might ask you to look for a two-hour stretch at something, I am focused entirely on making sure that if you bring your attention to me, that is an incredible honor, and therefore I have to figure out a way to in turn honor what you've brought me.
Ken Burns is on the front porch on NHPR. He's a documentary filmmaker from Walpole, New Hampshire. Of all the projects you've done, which do you consider to be your greatest achievement?
Each project that I've done, I've been able to give the very best of who I was at that moment. Hopefully I'm growing, not taking steps backwards. And I think because of the people I work with, I am growing because they've been so helpful. So there's not one project that I would say is the best. They're like children, you know. Mm-hmm. A good parent is not going to say, I like this kid over the other. You know, I know that the Civil War probably remains as kind of the most famous of them. But I made a film about the Shakers the second time out that is got as much attention and love from me as the Civil War did proportionally, and so exists as a just a different child in this menagerie.
Was there one that was especially hard to pull off?
Very much so. Many of them, I think part of what I've done has been rather naive and foolish, and that is to say I've sort of bitten off more than I could chew and then try to figure out whether I could chew and swallow it. And so the first one on the Brooklyn Bridge, I looked 12 years old when I was 23 years old trying to sell people the Brooklyn Bridge, and nobody had ever made a film like this, and so that had its own peculiar difficulties. And then the Civil War was a new threshold of attempt. I think after looking back at the last 25 years, I think jazz was the most complicated. We were taking something that was normally background and making it background, but also middle ground and foreground, and in some instances a kind of hyper ground where we were dissecting a piece of music, and at the same time had to do the same sorts of historical leaps as baseball did, covering a century and dealing with many complicated social issues. And I think that in many ways that is the most dimensional and complicated of the works, and then maybe in some ways the most satisfying, because we solved so many new and terrifying problems. When I was working on the Civil War, I asked Shelby Foote about U.S. Grant, and he said, Grant had what you call 4 o'clock in the morning courage. That meant you could wake him up at 4 o'clock in the morning and tell him the enemy had turned his left flank and he'd be as cool as a cucumber. And I think when you take on these projects, we all learn. My partner, Dayton Duncan, who's a co-producer on some of these films, Lynn Novick, another one, we wake up at 4 in the morning going, how do we do this?
You have a very distinctive style or approach that's occasionally satirized and often imitated. How do you feel about Ken Burns' knockoffs?
You know, I really, in some ways, to be honest, I don't really have an opinion. I'm aware that people employ aspects, but there's no copyright on technique. There's no copyright on style. Style has to be organic to work. That is to say, it has to be the natural response to the problems of creation. In my case, I'm trying to make a film. How do you do it? And then there's another million questions that follow that, literally. And how you respond to it with the techniques that you employ evolves as style. You know, you step back from a wall of Cézanne paintings, and they look a lot alike. And you could go to Cézanne and say, Monsieur Cézanne, how come you paint the same way? But you'd never do that. I think that we've just evolved. Each film to us seems totally different from the next, radically new approaches. But you can stand back and say, yes, we are using still photographs, we are using music in a certain way, and the fact that other people use them is absolutely their right. And the satires are wonderful, right on target, and true, you know.
Do you have a favorite one?
Well, I just was recently just eviscerated on The Simpsons as Homer finds himself watching a Ken Burns documentary by Ken Burns on Ken Burns, and I'm droning on and he can't find the clicker, and he prays to a god who has created two kinds of clam chowder to please show him where the clicker is, and the clicker is revealed and the show goes on to be about prayer. But I was the object, and we loved it, and my kids now think I'm somebody.
This is The Front Porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters with Ken Burns, documentary filmmaker from Walpole, New Hampshire. Have you ever started on a subject and given up?
You know, if you'd asked me that 6 months ago, I would have said no. And I consider that one of the most fortunate things of my professional life, is that I've been able to begin and finish everything I've really wanted to do. I've wanted to, most of my adult life, do a film on the life of Martin Luther King, and I was very, very close to beginning work on one. But circumstances conspired, and I had to sort of walk away because I needed to maintain a kind of independence of approach and content that I was worried that I wouldn't necessarily be able to have under the circumstances. So in some ways, yeah, I've had to walk away, and it just was like a miscarriage. It was just so painful and so terrible, but I'm still going to do it. You know, sometime I'll be back here and I'll tell you about the film I've just made on Martin Luther King. And so in some ways, no.
Are there other subjects that you want to tackle, but you haven't quite figured out how yet?
Well, I like to choose things, or those subjects choose me because they are so mysterious or they represent a particular challenge. You know, you get known for using still photographs, and then, you know, two of my favorite projects were Thomas Jefferson and Lewis and Clark because they occurred in a time that was pre-photographic, and then the challenges of how you engage photographs and other visual material to tell that story become even more critical than, say, something like the Civil War, where there's not more than you need, but an abundance of still images, or jazz and baseball, where you sometimes wish it was more limited. There's a tyranny of choice. So I think this is what I understand, is that if I were given 1,000 years to live, I'd never run out of interesting subjects in American history. And at any given time, there are 30 or 40 lottery-like ping pong balls bouncing around in my head. One of them shoots down to my heart, and we say, that's what we're going to do. And we engage in that for a long period of time. And the reason it comes down to your heart has to do as much with the mystery of the subject as with anything you already know. And in fact, that's why documentaries are sort of like castor oil to a lot of people, because I think too often they're the expression of an already arrived at end, somebody telling you what they know rather than sharing with you, as we try to do, a process of discovery. Hey, look what I found out. So there's never been a subject that I've made a film on where I've known about the subject completely going into it. It's all been a kind of education in process, and then turning around and sharing that enthusiasm, the newly acquired passion for the subject, with this other, you know, this friend in a way that I'm trying to speak to, which is the other, the audience.
Is there a project that came out particularly surprising, took a turn that you really weren't expecting?
You know, the process of making them is always surprising. You're always so stunned at how it doesn't appear to be what you thought it would be. And then towards the end, something sort of returns in which it comes back to something familiar to you. And it's prodigal in that way. You sort of wander in the desert for a long time in a project, and then you come back and you realize you're home, and there's an intense familiarity to it. You know, being here in New Hampshire has been a huge part of the nature of these films, choosing to leave New York 24 years ago and coming to New Hampshire and creating a community, not a society of colleagues, but a kind of community, a family of people who've come here. Some have put down permanent roots to work on these films. And I think that's been a huge influence in how we choose, how they get made, and in some ways, how they turn out.
I think anybody who's seen Walpole, New Hampshire, can understand wanting to live there.
Exactly.
It really is a beautiful town. But how did you wind up in Walpole specifically?
I went to college in Amherst, Massachusetts at Hampshire College, and graduated in 1975. And I went to New York, mostly straddled New York and Amherst for a few years until 79, when I moved up to Walpole. And I knew about it because I had had many friends who sort of headed for the hills after college, were weavers and midwives and carpenters and things like that, and settled in southwestern New Hampshire and in southeastern Vermont. And so I was aware of it. And though no friend at that time lived in Walpole, I lucked on a house that I'm still in, and have I can't imagine living anywhere else.
Ken Burns is on the front porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters. We'll be back after a short break. Still to come, Ken talks about bringing still images to life on screen, his next film project, and the challenges facing public TV. And tomorrow on the front porch, adventures and misadventures in extreme sports.
Support for The Front Porch comes from our contributing listeners and from Gibson's Bookstore, downtown Concord, welcoming author Bill McKibben with a book signing of Enough, Staying Human in an Engineered Age, May 9th at 7:30 p.m. The Target Stores of New Hampshire, supporting families, arts, and education in local communities with grants and employee volunteer efforts. Imagistics International, providing New Hampshire businesses with integrated network printing and document management. Information at imagistics.com. Stay with us for more on The Front Porch, and at 7 o'clock, it's Fresh Air.
We're talking with Ken Burns on The Front Porch on NHPR. Your first film was about the Brooklyn Bridge. What were you doing before you started this career?
Well, I had gone to college in the fall of 1971 with the absolute desire to become a feature filmmaker like Alfred Hitchcock or Howard Hawks or John Ford, particularly John Ford, who, you know, sang the epic verses of America. And all of my teachers at Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts, were social documentary still photographers. And they looked at this sort of rabid, you know, wide-eyed, naive interest in Hollywood and said, mm-hmm, okay. And then inculcated me with the fact that God is the greatest dramatist, that there's more drama in what is and what was than in anything of the human imagination. And that coincided with a completely untrained interest, but latent interest in history that I didn't really know I'd had. I'd loved American history, loved it, never took a course in it in college, but all of a sudden, this interest in documentary and history came together in an explosion, and the first film I made that I would sign my name to was at college for Old Sturbridge Village on work in the early 19th century, the last image of which, unlike any of the others, was an archival image. A painting, panning over a painting, and almost pointed me in the direction I would go. And a friend of mine handed me one day a book on the building of the Brooklyn Bridge by David McCullough, and we'd formed our company, a couple of graduates from Hampshire and myself, and we're struggling to stay alive and pay the rent. And I suddenly read this book and I said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to raise the money ourselves. We'll be the masters of our own fate. And of course, we starve for the next 3 years.
The Civil War was your first big project, your first large-scale project. What gave you the confidence to tackle that?
It was sort of naive. I remember finishing this book on Christmas Day of 1984. I was visiting my father in Western Michigan, and I finished reading this book called The Killer Angels, and I closed it, and he walked in the room, and I said, I know what I'm going to do next. And he said, what's that? And I said, the Civil War. And he said, what part? And I said, all of it. And he shook his head and walked out of the room like, oh, my God, who have I raised? And there was just a sense that I had been working on these subjects, Brooklyn Bridge, Shakers, Statue of Liberty, Huey Long, the Congress, all of which were chosen randomly and haphazardly, but had as a central determining factor this thing called the Civil War. And it was like a siren. It was calling me. It was insisting that I deal with it. And I think I approached it with a certain amount of naivete. Oh, sure, we'll do the Civil War. And I think the combination of the people who worked on it and that kind of faith that you could figure it out, and I guess some dumb luck, you know, made it possible to do this thing, which turned out to be a kind of watershed moment.
This is The Front Porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters with Ken Burns, documentary filmmaker from Walpole, New Hampshire. What's the hardest part of your job?
I think editing. You know, it's not enough to have a good idea. I've never met a filmmaker that didn't have a pretty good idea. It's not enough to even be able to figure out a plan of action or to go out and shoot and collect good images. I mean, it's tough to do interviews. It's tough to shoot live cinematography and keep the same intensity for the re-photographing of those still images. But I think you can bring a mountain of raw material to the editing room, and that's all it is. And you just really have to figure out how to stitch together the words, and the images, the interviews, the first-person commentary, and figure out how to tell a story.
So if that's the bad part of your job, what's the best part?
Boy, I think I have the best job in the country. I really, really do. The three moments that are really important to me. I love being out, you know, at dawn or late at night at a sunset and just am looking through the camera and see a shot that I know is going to be in the film because the light has just hit a building, a shaker building just so, or you've at a battlefield and have silhouetted a cannon against a sunset or whatever, or you've asked a great question of somebody and suddenly you're getting much, much more back than you anticipated, or you're inside an old photograph. And we don't just take one image holding it arm's length, but I might put up a photograph from the National Archives, say, of the Civil War, and go in and take 10 different shots, a wide shot, a medium shot, a close-up, now I'm being John Ford again, and panning and tilting and zooming and all of that stuff. There's an excitement in creating that thing. Then there's the moment in the editing room where something congeals out of nothing, a story emerges. And then finally there's this, the evangelical dimension of being able to go out around the country and talk to people about the thing I love, which is making films and American history, and talking about it and seeing that there was an evangelical dimension to what I'm supposed to be doing. And not in any self-serving way, but just in the idea that we're a country that still is relatively young, still burns our history behind us as if it's rocket fuel, looking forward and not looking back, and that there's so much in looking back that can be helpful to where we're going.
Ken Burns is on the front porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters. There must be something satisfying in building up a body of work, a Ken Burns oeuvre, I suppose, and looking ahead and seeing yourself being able to put together something over a career that will really be significant.
Duke Ellington was asked what was his favorite composition, and he said, the one I'm working on now. And so there is a sense, like children, that these projects have done something, but they're really the exploration of the same question. Who are we Americans? Who are these strange and complicated people who like to call themselves Americans? What does an investigation in the past tell us about who we were to become what we are now? So that there's a sense that you're just practicing, that each film is just practicing your own art, your ability to get along with other people, your ability to raise money, the themes of American history that animate us and make our past and I hope our future that much more glorious. And so I think that it is less a looking back at the work than paradoxically for an amateur historian looking forward to the challenges of the next new thing that you're struggling to make. We just finished a film on the first cross-country automobile trip, which is just a wonderful film. We're in the editing room on a film about Jack Johnson right now. We're interviewing veterans who are dying off at an alarming rate for a project, a major series on World War II. I was just out in New Mexico at Chaco Canyon looking at the ruins of the ancient Puebloan people for a series on our national parks. I mean, this isn't the best job in America, and I get to come home to Walpole, New Hampshire.
You mentioned the next film, which is in the finishing stages, is scheduled to run in October. It's called Horatio's Drive, and it's a really unusual story, and I suppose not exactly the typical Ken Burns story in some ways.
Well, we've hefted a lot of big themes. This doesn't really have very overt big things. The worst thing that happens is a crankcase breaks in this film. But this is a project that is equally Dayton Duncan's, who is the writer and co-producer and even appears in the film as an on-camera commentator. And he's been trying to interest me in this subject for about 10 years. It's just the story of a Vermont doctor who on a whim, on a bet, in a men's club in San Francisco, when he heard people poo-pooing the automobile and said it would never replace the horse, was only a rich man's toy, never be used for anything except inner city travel, he plunked down $50 and said, I bet I can go from San Francisco, where he was visiting, to New York and do in less than 3 months and do what no one had ever done before, though many automotive experts, which he was definitely not, had tried and failed miserably and now in retrospect hilariously to do. We don't usually do original research in our film. That is to say, the stuff that we collect is material that most experts will recognize in that field. But Dayton and his wife Diane were able to find the original letters and telegrams that Horatio Nelson Jackson sent home from every stop along the way, and we got Tom Hanks to read them, and makes this wonderful and in some ways a Trojan horse of a story. Funny, but a perfect picture, portrait of America on the cusp of extraordinary change, when the automobile is this thing that it could have been like a flying saucer landing in these towns, and it's going to transform and be the single, probably most influential machine of the next 100 years.
And this took place in 1905?
1903. This is the centennial of Horatio's drive and the bicentennial of Lewis and Clark. And we found a wonderful, if not hilarious, significance in this incredibly planned trip, military, scientific, diplomatic journey of Lewis and Clark 100 years before Horatio. And this one done on a bet, you know. 4 days after making this impulsive wager, he sets out from San Francisco, has to buy a car. Between that, so 4 days later, he's bought a car, outfitted it, hired somebody to come along with him, and takes off and brought a camera, a still camera along, and buys a dog along the way, and all three of them wear goggles to protect them from the dust, and we have photographs to prove it.
The dog in goggles.
The dog in goggles. Bud. It's a great story, and it's a wonderful department. You know, the themes that we've engaged are subtly there. But to us, one of the themes, obviously, we've dealt with is race. But another one is the physicality of the United States. And, of course, that's in Lewis and Clark. It's in our series on the West. It's in Mark Twain. It's in many of the films we've done, and very much so in Horatio, crossing magnificently and at times hilariously this great country.
We're speaking with Ken Burns on the front porch on NHPR. You work primarily in public television. PBS is your main home.
Solely.
PBS, public television faces declining ratings and tough competition and funding issues. How would you draw more viewers to PBS?
I think that's a wonderful question. I think the decline in viewers that's happened recently has been actually corrected by a number of programming decisions, and that decline was pretty inevitable given the, you know, explosion of competitive channels, and the post 9/11 events, where lacking an instantaneous news gathering and dissemination wing, our traditional audience found itself desperately seeking news and lost the habit of coming back. We've wooed them back. I think PBS has a great brand, as you would say. It's so interesting that this much maligned and underfunded network and nevertheless manages to produce, I'm told, the best children's, the best science, the best nature, the best mathematics, the best public affairs, many people believe, and history, some people think, programming. And it does so from this almost perpetually assaulted posture. It does have to try to be too many things to too many people, and that's where it not only gets in trouble, but that's its great glory as well. And I think that just as public radio are essential tools of survival in a modern age, so too is public television.
Well, Ken, thank you very much for coming in today, and good luck with the future projects.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
Ken Burns, documentary filmmaker from Walpole, New Hampshire. His production company is called Florentine Films, and the website is florentinefilms.com. We'll post a link on the front porch section of our website, nhpr.org. Tomorrow on the front porch, one man's life in extreme sports. Bruce Genereau describes himself as an extreme sports junkie. He writes about rock climbing, whitewater kayaking, and more in his book, Beyond the Comfort Zone. The front porch is online at nhpr.org. You can listen to the show anytime, sign up to get our weekly schedule by email, and order tapes and CDs. That's at nhpr.org. The Front Porch is a production of NHPR. It's produced by Laura Colbert and Shay Zeller. I'm John Walters. Join me on the front porch tomorrow at 6:30 on NHPR.
At NHPR, we get support from our contributing listeners and from New Hampshire Institute of Art in Manchester, offering BFA and continuing education classes. Registration information at 623-0313, extension 511, or at nhia.edu. SFC Engineering of Manchester, making New Hampshire's engineering projects work. Online at sfceng.com. And Keene State College, continuing education, offering 6 and 12-week summer sessions starting May 19th and June 30th. Information at 1-800-KSC-1909. This is NHPR News and Information for the Granite State. WEVO 89.1 Concord in Manchester, 90.3 Nashua, 104.3 Dover, 91.3 Littleton. WEVH 91.3 Hanover and the Upper Valley, WEVN 90.7 Keene in the Monadnock region, WEVC 107.1 Gorham in the North Country, and WEVJ 99.5 Jackson and the Mount Washington Valley.